Chapter 86, The Broken Road. We finished searching the north side of the King's Highway and started on the southern half. Often, the only thing that marked one day from the next were the stories we told around the fire at night. Stories of Orin Velsitor, Laniel Young again, and Ilion. Stories of helpful swineherds and the luck of Tinker's sons. Stories of demons and fairies, of riddle games and barrow drogs. The Edema Rue know all the stories in the world, and I am Edema down to the center of my bones. My parents told stories around the fire every night while I was young. I grew up watching stories in dumb show, listening to them in songs, and acting them out on stage. Given this, it was hardly surprising that I already knew the stories Daedan, Hespa, and Martin told at night. Not every detail, but I knew the bones of them. I knew their shapes and how they would end. Don't mistake me. I still enjoyed them. Stories don't need to be new to bring you joy. Some stories are like familiar friends. Some are dependable as bread. Still, a story I haven't heard before is a rare and precious thing. And after 20 days of searching the Eld, I was rewarded with one of those.
"Once, long ago, and far from here," Hespa said as we sat around the fire after dinner. "There was a boy named Jax, and he fell in love with the moon. Jax was a strange boy, a thoughtful boy, a lonely boy. He lived in an old house at the end of a broken road.
Daedan interrupted. "Did you say a broken road?" Hespa's mouth went firm. She didn't scowl exactly, but it looked like she was getting all the pieces of a scowl together in one place, just in case she needed them in a hurry.
"I did. A broken road. That's how my mother told this story 100 times when I was little."
For a moment, it looked like Daedan was going to ask another question, but instead, he showed a rare foresight and simply nodded. Hespa reluctantly put the pieces of her scowl away. Then, she looked down at her hands, frowning. Her mouth moved silently for a moment. Then she nodded to herself and continued.
"Everyone who saw Jax could tell there was something different about him. He didn't play. He didn't run around getting into trouble. And he never laughed. Some folks said, 'What can you expect of a boy who lives alone in a broken house at the end of a broken road?' Some said the problem was that he never had any parents. Some said he had a drop of fairy blood in him, and that kept his heart from ever knowing joy. He was an unlucky boy. There was no denying that. When he got a new shirt, he would tear a hole in it. If you gave him a sweet, he would drop it in the road. Some said the boy was born under a bad star, that he was cursed, that he had a demon riding his shadow. Other folks simply felt bad for him, but not so bad that they cared to help. One day, a tinker came down the road to Jax's house. This was something of a surprise because the road was broken, so nobody ever used it.
'Hoy there, boy!'
the tinker shouted, leaning on his stick.
'Can you give an old man a drink?'
Jax brought out some water in a cracked clay mug. The tinker drank and looked down at the boy.
'You don't look happy, son. What's the matter?'
'Nothing is the matter,' Jax said. 'It seems to me a person needs something to be happy about, and I don't have any such thing.'
Jax said this in a tone so flat and resigned that it broke the tinker's heart.
"I'm betting I have something in my pack that will make you happy," he said to the boy. "What do you say to that?"
"I'd say, if you make me happy, I'll be grateful indeed," Jax said. "But I haven't got any money to spend, not a penny to borrow, to beg, or to lend."
"Well, that is a problem," said the tinker. "I am in business, you see."
"If you can find something in your pack that will make me happy," Jax said, "I'll give you my house. It's old and broken, but it's worth something."
The tinker looked up at the huge old house, one short step away from being a mansion.
"It is at that," he said.
Then Jax looked up at the tinker, his small face serious.
"And if you can't make me happy, what then? Will you give me the packs off your back, the stick in your hand and the hat off your head?
Now, the tinker was fond of a wager, and he knew a good bet when he heard one. Besides, his packs were bulging with treasures from all over the four corners, and he was confident he could impress a small boy. So he agreed, and the two of them shook hands. First, the tinker brought out a bag of marbles, all the colors of sunlight. But they didn't make Jax happy. The tinker brought out a ball and cup. But that didn't make Jax happy.
"Ball and cup doesn't make anyone happy," Martin muttered. "It's the worst toy ever. Nobody in their right mind enjoys ball and cup."
The tinker went through his first pack. It was full of ordinary things that would have pleased an ordinary boy. Dice, puppets, a folding knife, a rubber ball, but nothing made Jax happy. So the tinker moved on to his second pack. It held rarer things. A gear soldier that marched if you wound him. A bright set of paints with four different brushes. A book of secrets. A piece of iron that fell from the sky. This went on all day and late into the night, and eventually the tinker began to worry. He wasn't worried about losing his stick, but his packs were how he made his living, and he was rather fond of his hat. Eventually, he realized he was going to have to open his third pack. It was small, and it only had three items in it, but they were things he only showed to his wealthiest customers. Each was worth much more than a broken house, but still, he thought, better to lose one than to lose everything and his hat besides. Just as the tinker was reaching for his third pack, Jax pointed.
"What is that?"
"Those are spectacles," the tinker said. "They're a second pair of eyes that help a person see better."
He picked them up and settled them onto Jax's face. Jax looked around.
"Things look the same," he said.
Then he looked up.
"What are those?"
"Those are stars," the tinker said.
"I've never seen them before."
He turned, still looking up. Then he stopped stock still.
"What is that?"
"That is the moon," the tinker said.
"I think that would make me happy," Jax said.
"Well, there you go," the tinker said, relieved. "You have your spectacles."
"Looking at it doesn't make me happy," Jax said. "No more than looking at my dinner makes me full. I want it. I want to have it for my own."
"I can't give you the moon," the tinker said. "She doesn't belong to me. She belongs only to herself."
"Only the moon will do," Jax said.
"Well, I can't help you with that,"
the tinker said with a heavy sigh.
"My packs and everything in them are yours."
Jax nodded, unsmiling.
"And here's my stick. A good sturdy one it is, too."
Jax took it in his hand.
"I don't suppose," the tinker said reluctantly, "that you'd mind leaving me with my hat. I'm rather fond of it."
"It's mine by right," Jax said. "If you were fond of it, you shouldn't have gambled it away."
The tinker scowled as he handed over his hat.
Tempy made a low noise in his throat and shook his head. Hespa smiled and nodded. Apparently, even the Adem knew it's bad luck to be rude to a tinker.
So Jax settled the hat on his head, took the stick in his hand, and gathered up the tinker's packs. When he found the third one, still unopened, he asked,
"What's in here?"
"Something for you to choke on," the tinker spat.
"No need to get tetchy over a hat," the boy said.
"I have greater need of it than you. I have a long way to walk if I'm to find the moon and make her mine." "But for the taking of my hat, you could have had my help in catching her," the tinker said.
"I will leave you with the broken house," Jax said. "That is something, though it will be up to you to mend it."
Jax put the spectacles on his face and started walking down the road in the direction of the moon. He walked all night, only stopping when she went out of sight behind the mountains. So Jax walked day after day, endlessly searching.
Daydan snorted.
"Doesn't that sound just a little too familiar?"
he muttered loud enough for everyone to hear.
I wonder if he was pissing his time up a tree like we are.
Hespa glared at him, the muscles in her jaw clenching. I gave a quiet sigh.
Are you done?
Hespa asked pointedly, glaring at Daydan for a long moment.
What?
Daydan asked.
Shut up while I'm telling my story is what? Hespa said.
Everyone else had their say.
Daydan climbed to his feet, indignant.
Even the mute chimed in.
He waved a hand at Tempe.
How come I'm the only one you get hissy at?
Hespa seethed for a moment, then said,
You're trying to pick a fight halfway through my story is why.
Telling the truth isn't picking a fight,
Daydan grumbled.
Someone needs to speak some sense around here.
Hespa threw her hands up in the air.
You're still doing it. Can't you set it down for one evening? Every chance you get, you have to bitch and minge on.
At least when I don't agree, I speak my mind, Daydan said. I don't take the coward's way out.
Hespa's eyes flashed, and despite my better judgment, I decided to jump in.
Fine, I interrupted, looking at Daydan.
If you've got a better idea for finding these folk, let's hear it. Let's talk it over like adults. My interjection didn't slow Daydan down the least bit. It just pointed him in my direction.
What would you know about adults? He said. I'm sick and tired of being talked down to by some boy who probably doesn't even have hair on his balls yet.
I'm sure if the mayor had known how hairy your balls were, he would have put you in charge, I said, with what I hoped was infuriating calmness. Unfortunately, it seems he missed that fact and decided on me instead. Daydan drew a breath, but Tempe broke in before he could start.
Balls, said the Adem curiously. What is balls?
All the air went out of Daydan in a rush, and he turned to look at Tempe, half irritated, half amused. The big mercenary chuckled and made a very clear motion between his legs with a cupped hand.
You know, balls, he said,
without a trace of self-consciousness. Behind his back, Hespa rolled her eyes, shaking her head.
Ah,
Tempe said, nodding to show his understanding.
Why is the mayor looking at hairy balls?
A pause. Then a storm of laughter rolled through our camp, exploding with all the force of the pent-up tension that had been ready to boil into a fight. Hespa laughed herself breathless, clutching at her stomach. Martin wiped tears from his eyes. Daydan laughed so hard he couldn't stand upright and ended up crouching with one hand on the ground to steady himself. By the end of it, everyone was sitting around the fire, breathing hard and grinning like silly idiots. The tension that had been thick as winter fog was gone for the first time in days. It was only then that Tempe briefly caught my eye. His thumb and forefinger rubbed together gently. Gladness? No. Satisfaction. Realization dawned on me as I met his eye again. His expression was blank as always. Studiously blank. So blank it was almost smug.
Can we get back to your story, love? Daydan asked Hespa. I'd like to know how this boy gets the moon in the bed.
Hespa smiled at him. The first honest smile I'd seen her give Daydan in a handful of days.
I've lost my place, she said. There's a rhythm to it, like a song. I can tell it from the beginning, but if I start halfway through, I'll get it all tangled up in my head.
Will you start over tomorrow if I promise to keep my mouth shut?
I will, she agreed, if you promise.